dear listeners, and welcome to Deutsche Grammophon's international podcast series. I'm Sarah Willis, and I'm looking forward to podcasting with the Yellow Label's star-studded cast of musicians. Today, I'm in a former silent movie theater in Weißensee on the outskirts of Berlin, where one of my favorite violinists in the whole world, Lisa Batishvili, is filming some promotion videos for her new album, City Lights. Having spent all yesterday evening listening to the album, I couldn't wait to get here to talk to her about it. Lisa, you're amazing. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm so happy to talk to you as a first person about this project.
I'm so excited. As I got the tracks, I had to put them on immediately, and I was just in my apartment going around doing things, and I had to stop because I was like, this music is amazing. I had to literally stop, sit down, and listen to it properly. It's called City Lights, and we are in an old silent movie theater. Something is ringing a bell, tell me.
Yes, absolutely. I think it's quite known to everyone that City Lights was one of the most famous movies of Charlie Chaplin, and that was the initial motivation for me to start this project. And
are you an old movie fan, black and white silent film?
I am a huge fan of Charlie Chaplin, and I think it was one of the most amazing personas of the 20th century because he was such a multi-talent, and his music was, I would say, as good as his movies.
And it's such, most people don't know that.
No, and I don't think they know that this was his, these were his compositions, actually. And he played the violin as well, and he was such a musical person. That was, for me, always a dream to actually put together his music and make an album or just play that music, which was a very complex thing at the end.
How come it was complex? What made it so complicated?
The thing is that all these old themes, also from other tracks, they are very difficult to obtain because of the rights. What we did is we made a kind of like medleys or suites out of different themes, especially with Chaplin, and we gave it's like a modern touch to it that I had in
modern times.
Yes, I have an amazing friend, arranger Nicolo Zradrelli, who is my friend and who initially gave me this idea to dedicate this music to cities that would be important to my life. And this is a kind of a journey through the cities.
It's a fantastic idea. And to start off with the Chaplin, I must say, since hearing the album yesterday, all day I've been singing da 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 da. And you're in this silent movie theater because you were filming the promotion videos. Mm-hmm. Did you have it up on the wall? Are we going to see it?
Yes, absolutely. You're going to see. I have the feeling that we are, in general, really nostalgic about the 1920s and 30s at the moment. I feel that I'm seeing those images everywhere at the moment, in the movies, in literature, also in newspapers, that people have the feeling that at that time everything was possible. People went for it. They didn't know what would happen tomorrow. So people were experimenting and really being very, very open about things. And it's just so inspiring for me to go back. Also this fashion on the lifestyle.
That's everything. The real reason. Come on, admit it. You wanted to wear the clothes.
I did want that as well. And it makes such a difference.
You feel like a glamorous movie star.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely.
Can you imagine not having any, not words to express, but just music? You know, in these old films, the music was everything, wasn't it?
Absolutely, and I think for Charlie Chaplin was a real problem when the normal movie business started with sound, because his expression of the mimic and music was so strong that he actually did say that he would like to stay with that because the emotions can be transmitted much better and much stronger.
Well, it starts. Your album starts off with this amazing city memories. You've got, the theme from modern times, theme from limelight. I mean, really wonderful things. And then you move on to a city that's very important to you because you live there, Munich.
Yes, absolutely. I move on to Munich and then to many other cities as well, of course, because, like every other artist, I've traveled a lot. And I also moved from my home country to Germany, and some of the cities in this world have been especially important to me on a musical journey, but also personally, like Paris, for example, or Berlin. Yeah. And I wanted to dedicate to all the cities. It's like a love declaration to all those places in a composition with the will and real kind of passion for this music, and this is all sorts of music on this album. We have Bach, we have Dvorak, Piazzolla, Giacancelli, who was the biggest composer in Georgia in the last century, and unfortunately he left us just a couple of months ago. So I found it also important to have a, make an homage to his persona, and it's I think it's probably not only the most personal album from of my life, but also something I've spent the most time of to prepare, to get ready with my friend Nika Rajveli, who made all this, most of the arrangements, and to get all the tracks on the album which are recorded for the first time in these arrangements.
They are really fantastic arrangements. I mean, that really sticks out when you listen to the album. And the Rundfunk Symphony Orchestra played half of them, and the other half, the Georgian
Philharmonic.
Georgian Philharmonic played. And I find that also very fitting to your, to the, you sort of included all sorts of friends and colleagues. You have amazing soloists making guest appearances. Tell us about them. I was so impressed.
Yeah, I'm a fan of all of them. Yeah,
me too.
Well, I'll start with Katie Melua because she is a guest artist on the London track.
She lives in London.
Yeah. She moved from Georgia when she was 8 years old. And she's the person we thought about because I think it's nice to connect with a person who is in a different genre but has a similar kind of nostalgia for the home country and also has been so supported by another country like United Kingdom in her case, and I wanted to share that experience with her, and she wrote this song for London herself, and she was happy to share it with us, and it was the first time I've
and sing it with you and sing and play it
absolutely.
With you
absolutely, and I really love her music. I think she's an incredible person, and also I like her because of her capability of being Georgian and British at the same time. You know, she can be both, and at the same time she is herself, and she has absolutely her own sound and her style. So that was a wonderful encounter, actually. And then about Berlin, so of course there are so many great musicians in this city. But as soon as I go out from the typical classical world, I'm thinking of Till Brönner, because as a young student, I was already listening to his recordings, and I just loved.
I was so happy to see you two have been friends for a long time, but finally to play together.
Absolutely. And the first time actually we played in the same concert, it was in the New Year's Eve concert with Daniel Barenboim in one concert, and I just thought, I have to ask him, maybe he will say okay.
Yes. It's a great piece. Ich habe einen Koffer in Berlin. I have a suitcase in Berlin. And actually, that's more or less true for you as
this
well.
This is my life, yeah. Right? Yes. Probably Berlin is the city I love most to spend time because you know why. You are from Berlin. But
it's a really cool place.
And I do feel that every time I leave the city, I leave part of me here.
A coffer.
Of myself. A coffer. Yeah. So it was very nice. And I don't know if people know about it, but Marlene Dietrich, she was a violinist, and it's Marlene Dietrich's song, Ich habe einen Koffer in Berlin. She was a violinist, she studied violin in Weimar Conservatory. And in a way, there is also this sort of correct connection to the instrument. Like for Paris, for example, Michel Legrand's song called Paris Violon, which is not his most popular song, but in a way, it's also one of the most beautiful things you can imagine, because the way he loves his city, and he kind of describes all the beauties through the instruments.
Yeah. Who else do we have? We have Maximilian playing beautiful octave duets with you in the in which one? Which
it's
one?
Was he was
in.
He,
that's right. In Paradiso, he was in Rome.
Yes.
You went to Rome with Maximilian.
Yes.
And you went to Buenos Aires with Milos.
Yes. With Milos also, we wanted to play together for years and years. And when I decided to do this album, I knew that one of the tracks would happen with him. And we chose to play Piazzolla together and dedicate it to Buenos Aires, of course.
Can I ask you something very cheeky? And that is, when people in the popular music world record, often they never meet each other. They call it laying down tracks. They lay down the tracks in their studio and then they send the tracks and it will get all mixed together. Did you manage to be in the same room with all of these people to record?
Three out of four, yes.
Okay.
And that was an amazing experience, because also for them it was a new new kind of
Absolutely.
Thing to do.
Absolutely, they're used to just doing it with headphones, a click track.
It's fantastic. Of course, we had an amazing producer and sound engineer in one, Jonathan Allen, who is an incredible...
It's the Yellow Label, come on.
It's Yellow Label, and he is, I think the support that we got from him and also the way he put everything together was for me also a complete new experience. And we worked on the sound on each track in a different way, because he also said, you know, each single, each piece of music has its own projection and sound
completely that you
intensity
really hear that.
And you yeah. can work on it yeah. and I think in the classical world we're still a little bit kind of in the old times where we try to polish everything and make nice sound, but I think we have to be more give it more character to
it. I think maybe people
thing.
Are a little afraid that they won't do the composer justice. We're always so worried about what the composer meant.
But
you know?
did the composers Bach know that one day would be able to record something?
Of course not. And did, I mean, for like Mozart horn concertos, did he know that we'd be playing them with valves and with proper chromatics?
Not.
He would have written completely differently.
Yes, absolutely.
So that's a really important part of this album, I think, is the different sounds. And you really hear it, you know, and there's a lot of nice touches in there, like the movie reel crackling and then
yeah.
unrolling.
Yeah.
And you hear it flapping around the reel.
I think you can hear out some sort of nostalgia out of
Absolutely.
Each track, because it's a kind of, I think for each person, the most of this music is recalls some sort of emotions and old experiences or some images from childhood or whatever, youth, depending on the age of the listener. But I feel there is so much connection to the life experience. That was for me also one of the reasons why we added this special effects.
So as a classically trained world-class violinist, don't go red now, I'm allowed to gush, I'm a fan. No, you are for us, in my orchestra, you're one of our absolute favorite soloists. We adore playing with you, you know, audiences all around the world go crazy when you play. And it's fantastic, you've got this amazing technique. And you play Tchaikovsky, Sibelius, you know, you've recorded all these pieces. Now you're playing stuff that's really different for you. Mm. Maybe you played it all at home, but this is, you know, we're hearing you play these things for the first time. Why would a classically trained violinist feel, I know you say it's nostalgia and you love these pieces, but some people may look at it and think, you know, is it just commercial or... I know that your heart absolutely is in this, but how is it physically? I mean, what do you is it easy for you to play after Shostakovich and Prokofiev and Tchaikovsky? Or, for example, the Hungarian number. God, that's
yeah.
really hard.
Yeah, or arranged by your colleague,
yeah,
Stefan
Kontz. That's really hard. Well,
that's
he knows what you can do.
Yes, well, it gives me an incredible pleasure to play this music on a different level than any other classical repertoire that I've played, because I wouldn't say that I have less respect for this kind of this music than for Tchaikovsky or Sibelius. I think that quality-wise it's on the same level, because I think Morricone or Chaplin or Piazzolla, they were all masters in their genres, which was maybe a little bit different, but they were also very broad, great talents, and I haven't thought for a second during this project that it was in any way meant for commercial reasons, because first of all I worked on it so hard like never before for
you
2 years.
You had to practice these pieces like you practiced
I had to
Sibelius.
Practice these pieces. Of course the arrangements were done in some cases very last minute so we had to be very quick with bringing it together, but I think the colors and the emotions of the music just carry me like on a carpet, you know. I just feel very happy playing this music and also giving it to the audience. I can't wait for the moment where I will just perform it for the audience for the first time.
Do you have a favorite out of all of these ones? Can you say, is it like your children? You can't pick a favorite.
I have a few favorites.
Okay.
And I'm probably not going to say which one, because I want to leave that to the audience. But I must say the Chaplin, since that was the initial track, is also probably one of the most special ones, alongside Buenos Aires, which also is a new, completely
it's a
new kind of arrangement.
It is. It's really, you know, new tango, isn't it?
There is so much Piazzolla out there,
yeah.
And also violin guitar duets. But this kind of arrangement with the orchestra and bringing two or three themes of Piazzolla together in this way, I think this will be something special.
I thought the orchestra did really well as well, I must say.
Yes.
Because as an orchestral musician, you know, to have these sort of pieces put, we're used to sort of pieces putting in front of us that we know or had time to practice. They probably didn't have the music for very long.
No, no.
They had to lay it down.
Absolutely. And some of the things, you know, they just did on the spot. And I could feel how people, you know, were in the groove at some point because of, we shouldn't be scared of doing things that one wouldn't usually do, but something that we believe in, and when the quality is there, it's again about the expression of the music and also the history of it. I think then there is no doubt behind.
Not only that, it's also, as you say, the quality of the playing, because I think you can. These pieces need that quality of playing, otherwise, you know, there's a danger of cheesiness if someone's
Absolutely.
Trying to get those high notes or trying to play those fast passages.
Yeah, there is always a kind of a borderline, of course, and you have to make sure
borderline.
You are still kind of in between. And that was, for me, of course, a challenge, because I still am a classical musician and will continue being, but this will be probably my love project.
You're a citizen of the world. We all are. We play in all these different countries and we have friends wherever we go, and there's always dinners with different people, with different foods in every country we go to. And this album is really, for you, a statement about that, you know, all your favorite cities. How do you cope with all this traveling? Because people see you glamorous on stage, but I know myself, because it's, you know, I do it at a less level with you. I always have an orchestra with me. You go by yourself. But the glamorous side is there is a very unglamorous side to traveling. You have a family living in Munich. You were there just for a day, I think, and then you came here. It's tough.
It's tough. I won't say
people no. don't really realize that a lot of the time.
Yeah.
You know, they see the glamour, they see the there's a lot of hard work that goes into it, but it's tough.
I think for me the biggest challenge is to have these two lives. Life at home, whatever you are, as a mother, as a wife, as a child, whatever, and then
being
on stage and switching on and off somehow. That is for me the biggest challenge still today. And I think we need to not only have a lot of energy, but also be psychologically very stable and strong. That and throughout the years, and it's not just a short period of time, but it's something ongoing.
Is that something you work at, like your practice? You know, this sort of mental stability.
I have my bad days as well, like everyone, and there are moments where I'm not sure that I can continue this way because the rhythm is very, very intense. But those moments where the music makes me stronger, and they really exist, especially when I work with great people who inspire me on stage, and you know, there's always this great energy, then I understand why I'm doing it. Because there is always the moment of being exhausted and also needing to put the violin away and just, you know, recharge your batteries or whatever you call it, just be, you know, off the road. But I don't think it's easy for them who don't travel either. I think it's all about choosing your life and somehow being pragmatic about some things, because you need to know that it's not like what we're seeing on social media often,
the perfect
people are
world
having
of social
an
media.
Easy time and just enjoying it, because there is always a dark side for everything.
Yeah, I think people know that about artists in general, but people often don't like to look behind the scenes because they want to have this glamorous persona. I remember I heard the singer Maria Callas said in a masterclass to one of her students, said, the audience doesn't pay to hear you try, you know, and that was sort of like, oh, okay, you know, the minute you put your foot out on the stage, you're not trying anymore, you have to become that person everyone's come to see, and that really drains. Doesn't
Absolutely.
It? But as you say, when you work with great people, it feeds you as well.
That's the thing. And I think it's all about that at the end, and how we cope with all these things. And things change in life as well. And you have to also be quite flexible and accept that you're not always on the same level. But how do you actually get your strength back and make sure that, you know, everything, we have so much additional stress today as well because of things moving faster. And it's the same for the young generation.
I wouldn't like to be a school kid these days, you know, with all the stress and all this, the quickness of the
this
keyboards and everything. Gosh.
Yeah.
But they're a lot older. Your daughter, how old is she now?
I mean, she's almost 16.
And she seems like, you know, me at 16, I wasn't nearly like that. I mean, it was really impressive how
me
grown
neither.
Up.
I was a child and she's not anymore.
But I just have to say, I mean, in all this sort of dark side that there is if you're an artist, it's still an amazing thing for your soul to be able to visit these different countries, isn't it? And the things you absorb when you're there.
It's what makes us artists, I think. It's the travel. That's why I find it also nice for my children to be also very present in different countries. They travel with us because you become who you are through all these places you visit and people you meet. And this is why also this is one of the reasons for me it's so important to bring it on the album, to say this is almost like an autobiographical message, to say I've went through all these places and I have my own memories connected to them, and this can start with age zero to today.
Yeah. And last time we played together, it was for this Musicians for United Europe. And you were so engaged with all this. Well, we all were. I mean, we felt so helpless in this terrible times here with Europe dissolving and England leaving. And we felt, what can we do? What can we do? We can play music. So we got together and it was one of the most inspiring concerts. It was absolutely wonderful that everyone was there. I know you're very active, also your speech at the Opus Classics. It's very important to you to get that message out to the world about how music unites.
I think this is our hope for the future, that through music, through arts, people will speak the kind of common language. And this has always been the case, in a way, this music and reflecting the society. For me, Europe has been a place of my dreams as a child, and it is still, even with all the problems, because I know how difficult it is in many, many other places in the world and how much we should not take it for granted that Europe is still doing actually quite well.
we're foreigners,
yes,
living in Germany.
And we are still kind of going back into the whatever 1920s or to the 18th century, 19th century, and this is our whole kind of history and the rich history that carries us and brings us further, and we should never not only forget it, but just put it aside.
Can you imagine being anything else apart from a violinist?
Oh, what about you?
No, I asked you first. You can ask me in the next podcast.
Well, the thing is that me as a musician now, I'm not only just a violinist, because I've started doing so many different things.
I apologize. That wasn't meant to sound like you're just a violinist. You know what I mean?
What I'm saying is that through the music, you can also make more things and get a broader idea of how you can be useful for the society, or just simply also support young people. I think for me at the moment this is the next step, where I see so many talented young, not only Georgians but especially Georgians, coming and asking for advice or whatever, and that to be in a situation, in this great situation, to be able to give advice and to help and to just be in touch with them. This is for me kind of this new extra life that is not coming out from my usual artistic comfort zone.
Politician would be the next life.
Oh, I wouldn't wish to myself to be a politician. I think this is really, really hard stuff. But I think it would be just for me a dream to be aware and to be conscious about the society. Consciousness already is, a big step forward.
Well, thank you for this great present of City Lights. It's so wonderfully autobiographical, and just the sheer differences of the music on it. It's such a, you just think, oh, what's coming next? Oh, and then listening to it and not looking at the track list, it was great to think, that sounds like Paris. Oh, that is Paris. Oh, that sounds like Budapest. Oh, it was Budapest.
So you've guessed it right. And I hope that it will be also a journey for the people, simply through the places and through this music of the last centuries.
Well, I have an instrument here that has made a journey to see you. I, you know, we've filmed together, and you know that my horn is always with me. And one of the greatest pleasures we have had is making people I've interviewed try the horn. And you are a professional already because you've done it twice now. Have you done it once?
I've cheated on your horn and I've tried another horn.
I think that's what it was. But when Deutsche Grammophon said to me, you know, what could we bring into the podcast to bring in a little surprise, I thought, I'll just bring my horn. I'm describing your face to the listeners right now. Lisa is sort of looking a little bit worried, but she actually knows that she can do this. I would like to challenge you to get a note out of my horn and see whether it might have a place on a future album.
Sarah, if I had known, I would have practiced, I promise, I'm really afraid to disappoint you.
Well, that's cheating because the worse you are, the more we love you. We've had all sorts of people try and play the horn, and it's been wonderful, as they've been terrible. I remember you being quite good, but we've had a couple, like Ivan Fischer, he played the beginning of the Brahms piano concerto. It was like he'd practiced, he'd gone into a room, asked about the fingering, practice, and that's
cheating.
Not okay.
No.
But for the listeners, Lisa is looking absolutely beautiful today in a black and white outfit with a red belt. She's also got lipstick to match the red belt. And the lipstick is not allowed on the horn. We don't only have a horn, we have a nice little tissue for you. The makeup artist is going to have a fit in the background now.
Okay.
And so I am now giving you the horn, and to prove that it's here, that was me.
It is my... I got the fingering.
You got the fingering? Okay, let's see if you can get the notes. So I'm passing the horn over to you. And to play us out of this podcast, take a big breath, and here we go. And once again. I think that was marvelous. Thank you so much. I think it really
suits
you.
The rhythm was right.
The rhythm was perfect. We've got to work on the a little bit.
Absolutely.
We will do that on our next podcast. We will have, I think, the Strauss Horn Concerto.
Absolutely.
Lisa, thank you so much for being part of this podcast. And I'm really looking forward to everything we have together in the future.
Me too. Thanks, Sarah.